Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Christine Alexander in the studio with me, Ale Moreno, Stevie Nichol. All good?
Hi.
Ready? We're ready for the Women's Euros too. We'll be previewing a little bit of that with the really tough news for Spain. The fact that Alexia Putellas will be out for the tournament with a torn ACL. She injured it this morning. But first, Christophe Galtier is the new PSG coach. Here's what he's done in the last few years. At least with Nice the last season, the Coupe de France runner-up. He was with Lille. He won the Ligue 1 championship in 2021, of course, previous to that, with Saint-Étienne. And, of course, the talk around Neymar was included in his presentation. Here's what he had to say. Neymar is a world-class player. What coach wouldn't want that player in their team? Of course, you have to have a balance, but I'm clear on what I want from him, and I'm sure he'll stay with us because we want the best people here. Now, of course, we have to bring in Julien Laurens, and I have to ask you, Julien, does that mean then that Neymar is staying at Paris?
No, it doesn't mean that. I mean, there was nothing else that Christophe Galtier could have said in his first press conference today at lunchtime. If he had said, yeah, we want Neymar out, we're trying to find a club for Neymar, you could just imagine it would have been fire everywhere. I think he played it well. A bit later on, he said, I really hope he stays because I think Galtier knows that there's also a chance that Neymar won't be there next season. But it was the right thing to say. Neymar turned up for training today a few days early, by the way, which I think is a really good sign from him. And in terms of commitment to the season, doesn't have to be commitment to PSG, but commitment to the season. But for Galtier, there was nothing else he could have said. You know, this was the right answer.
Is this the right answer? Then how tough is it to keep someone on like Neymar, CV, from a coach's perspective?
Well, from Galtier's perspective, right now it's dead easy. Mm-hmm. And he just showed you why, because it's about what you say. And it's dead easy to talk, as we know. Unfortunately, at some stage, that comes to an end. And you have to produce on the field. And when pre-season starts and when the pre-season games start, Neymar is going to have to produce on the field, because I don't think this guy will take any prisoners. He's certainly going to have to make a statement. We thought that the previous managers, Tuchel's and Pochettino's and everybody before, were going to do the same thing and make a statement, and none of them ever did. This guy's going to have to make that statement. And hopefully the statement is he gets people like Neymar to buy into what he's looking for, and it shows on the field. Otherwise, he's going to have to be brave and go the other way and chastise these kids.
It may all be talk, but he did make a couple of statements today in the press conference. And it wasn't specific to Neymar, but he did say, no player is above PSG. Now, that's exactly what you would say in an opening press conference, because indeed, you're trying to make that sort of opening introduction and saying, I am the one who's going to make the decisions. And another thing that I thought was important from the press conference when he said, we have a lot of talented players, but we need to make these talented players into a team. Hinting that they were never a team before under Mauricio Pochettino. Now, again, this is introductions. This is opening statement in a press conference. What value does it have? Not a whole lot if you don't have the backing and the support from the club and from those above you. That the players don't feel like they have the freedom to go above the manager to go and complain and then get away with whatever it is that they want to do. So at the very least, in the beginning, he's making all the right decisions and saying all the right things. But to Stevie's points, all of this will come to pass and the judgment will come to pass when we start seeing this team winning with consistency. And when they're losing, what is the reaction and how do the players react to the manager?
Because Pochettino said the same thing, that he had a lot of individuals mm-hmm. and he had to now try to make them play as a team. But with Neymar now, if he doesn't stay, Julien, are you hearing any other maybe teams that want him for the next season?
Well, certainly we know that he's been offered in around the big clubs in Europe. We obviously reported the link with Chelsea. And the fact that I think Todd Boehly, the new owner of the club, wants to make a statement with one superstar signing, whether that's Neymar or Cristiano Ronaldo, or maybe neither of them too, but someone else, that remains to be seen. But certainly there's some work being done from PSG to try to find him a club. I think from Neymar's people around him as well, because now I think there's also a feeling that maybe this is the right time to leave if there's a good offer somewhere. If he has to stay, he will stay. And I think that if Galtier can get the best out of Neymar, depends a lot on the position. I don't think that Neymar can play wide anymore. He doesn't have that kind of impact that he had a few years ago. I don't think Messi can play wide. So one of them will have to play centrally, and I don't think you can play them both centrally. But Galtier will have to work that out with Neymar, with Messi, with Mbappe, with all the others. But certainly, I think the boys are right. Discipline is the key here already. The squad that will leave for Japan, where most of the preseason and the friendlies will be next week, those players will sign there will be a new rules, a new set of rules with regulations and things that they have to follow. And if they don't follow them, there will be sanctions financially, for example, and things like that. So already I like that. And I think already this is necessary. But it all remains to see how much Galtier can implement those rules and what he wants and his authority on that squad and that dressing room and how much discipline the players follow, because it was a problem under Pochettino for sure.
In part, is that why they chose him too, Galtier, Julien, so he can actually, you know, put his foot down and discipline players like Neymar?
Yeah, I think that's right. He's a tough coach. He's got that tough personality. He comes from you know, quite a tough area in Marseille, and I think he's got that in him. You don't really mess with him. I think the other reason why he's there is his relationship with Luis Campos, the sporting director, where they are really, really close. Whereas in the past, we are used to seeing PSG manager not getting on with the sporting director, whether that was Antero Henrique, Leonardo, Patrick Kluivert, Leonardo in his first spell. But they used to be a bit of tension between the manager and the sporting director. Now that won't be the case. So if there's no tension between them two, if the manager says something, you don't go above to the sporting director anymore like they used to before, because you know that the sporting director is going to say, hang on a minute, the manager is my guy here. We each other guys. So if he says something, this has to be the thing, the rule, the position of the club, myself included. Before, Tuchel or Pochettino would say something, they would go above to Leonardo especially, and that would create a lot of troubles. Now, that won't happen anymore. So, again, I think that relationship between sporting director and manager for PSG would be quite interesting and quite important.
I actually don't believe in giving players a rule book because you're just setting yourself up to fail. Now, as far as the sporting director and the boardroom is concerned, that's where you need to have rules. Because they need to know who's in charge of what happens at the bottom of the stadium. You can do all you want up in the boardroom, but you don't come down the bottom and you don't get involved with my players or me. But as far as the manager with the players, having a rule book, to me, you're asking people to break it. You shouldn't need a rule book. All the best teams don't have rule books. They have men. They have people with dignity, who know right from wrong. And we all know you should be on time for meetings. We all know you shouldn't be late for the bus. We all know you shouldn't be going out the night before a game. There's nothing you can tell a player that he doesn't actually know. You don't need a rule book or a little sheet of paper with 10 rules on it. You know, good players and proper professionals don't need rules. I just think you're asking for trouble if you start giving them rules.
However, Stevie, this is a team that has had freedom in the past and has abused that freedom. And so at some point, you got to go back to the very beginning, to the very basic, and say, okay, you guys need a reminder of the things that you can and cannot do. Here it is. So to that point, I would say, okay, if we're going to start from zero, then let's make it very clear as to what is it that we're going to be ruled by, what is it that we're going to abide by, and what is it that we consider to be respectful behavior within the locker room. I think what's happening here is we're going back to square one, and we're going to say, we're going to begin from here, clean slate for everybody, and here are the things that we need to do in order to be successful.
It's up to the manager. The way the manager reacts at all times, from the minute he gets out of his car when he parks it in the stadium to when he leaves, tells the players who's in charge. Somebody steps out of line, regardless of the name in the back of the jersey, that's where you make your mark. That's where you make your mark. Nowhere else. And the fact is, all the ones before haven't done it. And maybe that's why they brought this guy in, because this guy's got a reputation for putting his foot down regardless of who you are. That's what they need. Let's see if it happens.
Yeah, let's see if Galtier can do that now with Neymar. With these rules that you're telling us, Julien, is it specifically because of Neymar's recent past?
Yeah, I don't think it's just targeting at him, but we know that in the past there's been issues there, of course. Stevie mentioned a few of the rules that have been broken before, of players being late, some players not turning up for training, you know, that kind of stuff, which just cannot work. It cannot work if you let that thing happen and that thing go. And I think certainly Pochettino wanted to take some sanctions. He was not allowed by people above him, whether that was Leonardo or Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the president, or, you know, whatever. This is a different era. This is a different time now. Those people are not there anymore. Leonardo is gone. Pochettino is gone. Nasser Al-Khelaifi is still there, but we'll take a step back very much in the way the club is functioning on a daily basis. So now it's down to Campos and Galtier to make sure that those things don't happen, whether it's Neymar or Messi or Mbappe or someone else. No one can be late for the bus, for lunch or dinner, for training, for team meeting, for the physio appointment, anything like that. People have to follow that. And if you have to be tough at the beginning, then maybe you have to be tough at the beginning. But this is certainly something that was not really working before.
Clearly not working, because we know the mission now is and has been for many years to win the Champions League title. Stevie, can they do that with Neymar?
Well, they can do it with the Neymar they bought. You know, the fact that he's turned up early for training is a great sign. You wouldn't put money on that, right. That's for sure. He could have had another three nights out. He chose not to. That's a good start. But yeah, absolutely. If Neymar gets back to the guy that he signed, then yes, they can. They've got the talent. They've got as much talent as anybody else. They just can't quite get it together when it matters most. So yes, they could win it. I'm not putting money on it, but they could win it.
And people out there may think, when we're talking about these rules, like, what does it really matter if you show up late to a training session or to a players' meeting or whatever other rule that you broke as a player? Well, what it does is that it starts creating cracks in the foundation, division within the team. You start then, when things are going smoothly, then everybody's okay, everybody's happy. But when things start going south, those cracks that I just mentioned in the foundation, they start showing up. And in the case of PSG, no better example than what we saw in Champions League last season, where those cracks were already there. We knew they were there. And then in a moment in which they needed everybody to come together, they fell completely apart. So for me, if this team is going to make a deep run and indeed threaten to win Champions League, the foundation has to be solid. No cracks, no fractures, no divisions. Be the concept of a team first, and then allow the talented players in the attack to take over. But unless you have a good foundation, solid foundation, which every other really good team in Europe has, then this team will go nowhere. If you have it, you have a chance. If you don't, they will fail again.
Now, Julien, with that foundation comes, of course, the happiness of the players. How happy is Neymar with relationships with, say, Kylian Mbappé?
They're close. They've always been friends. I don't think that Kylian's sort of new contract and new position at the heart of this project and being the superstar and the fact that this is his team very much now, I don't think that really had impacted Neymar, or certainly that's not what I've been told. But maybe, as we explained before and on the show, in previous shows as well, there's a feeling that this could be a good time for him, if there's another project offered to Neymar, to go and to leave and to let Kylian Mbappe and Messi for one more season, you know, take charge of this team and see how far they can go. I think Galtier is going to struggle to play them three together. I have to be honest here. I don't think, I'm going to repeat myself, but I don't think Neymar and Messi can play wide anymore and have a real impact on a team, neither with the ball or without the ball. And especially without the ball, we saw last season how unbalanced the team was to try to recover the ball because those three don't defend. So I think Galtier will have to make big decisions where you play Messi, where you play Neymar. Can you actually play them three together but not Neymar and Messi wide? Because that's not going to work, especially in the big games in the Champions League. We're not talking about Ligue 1. Ligue 1, Ale Moreno and Stevie Nicol can still play for that PSG team and they will win the league. But we mean the big games, the game that matters the most. He will have to find a way of getting the best out of Neymar and Messi. And I'm really not convinced them two can play together anymore because, again, for me, the only solution is one playing centrally behind Kylian Mbappe, for example, in a front two or a 10 just behind Kylian. Because wide, there's no point. And then both of them centrally, again, there's no point. They're going to walk on each other. So it'd be very interesting to see what they do. But for Neymar, this is a huge summer for him. He might end up staying, and maybe, and we will see then what kind of mindset he has with the World Cup coming up. But he knows he's not the main guy anymore. The main guy will be now Kylian, not him, not Messi. So he will have to deal with it as best as he can if he stays. And if he leaves, I think people at the club will wish him good luck.
I'm pretty sure that was not a compliment for us, Stevie. I don't think.
Sit up, boys.
No, he was.
Listen, I need help to get on this chair. Never mind playing in the Champions League.
No, he said Ligue 1. Ligue 1, we got it. Champions League, we're not quite cut out for that.
I beg your pardon, you might be right.
Well, speaking of Champions League football, we know Cristiano Ronaldo is trying to figure that out for next season. He has also been linked to Chelsea. And Julien, you mentioned this big splash that the Blues are trying to make. Is Cristiano Ronaldo that big splash that the Blues could make?
Well, it seems certainly that in the meeting between Jorge Mendes and Todd Braley that Todd Braley was listening, for sure. I think he wants to make a statement. It's a strange position when you've just bought a club and you're now the sporting director in that club, because this is technically what Braley is. And then you'll have to make those decisions. Do you think that Cristiano Ronaldo can bring a lot to Chelsea Football Club right now? Are you ready to invest on him for at least 2 years? I don't think Cristiano will sign for anything less than 2 years. What does Thomas Tuchel think, by the way? Is he keen on getting Ronaldo and a finisher like him in the team, but that maybe doesn't do much apart from scoring the goals, especially without the ball? I'm not too convinced either. But the problem is, this is the questions that a lot of clubs that Cristiano has been offered to in Europe right now will ask themselves. Okay, is he an added value to our squad? Maybe he will bring goals and he bring the fact that he's Cristiano, but what else does he do for the team? And I think Napoli, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, PSG, wherever he's been offered so far, they will all have to answer those questions. And I think the answers are quite easy in a way. No, Cristiano won't help you much, help the team much. He doesn't do much for the team with or without the ball. We saw that with Manchester United last season. However, if you just want him to convert the chances that you create for him, if you want him to be that finisher and that's all you're asking him, then he will do that. But is there a manager right now in a top European club who just wants his centre forward to just do that and nothing else? I'm not too convinced.
Is this a profile, the kind of player that Chelsea could need for next season?
Why would you not need a guy that scores goals? Mm. What do you think Romario did? You talk about one of the best goal scorers that ever played the game. Some people like Gary Lineker. It was one of them. You know what? Stay away. Get yourself in the box and we'll get you the ball. I mean, because 24 goals, you stick 24 goals on top of Chelsea, and you're going to tell me that the coach doesn't want it? That's madness. They've got 10 other players who absolutely will be able to create chances. And Cristiano showed last year, regardless of his age, that he still knows where the back of the net is. So why would you turn down? And by the way, that's 24 goals in a bad team. How many is he going to get in a better team? I don't understand. If they've got the money and they've got plenty of it and they can do it, I don't see why they wouldn't do it.
And that's on the field. Merely off the field, if you're a new ownership and you're Toboli and you come in, it has to be incredibly tempting that they put Cristiano out there for you and you go, wait a second. It changes the profile of the team. It changes the profile of the club. Because it is Cristiano Ronaldo and because all of our eyes will be on Chelsea. They were going to be regardless, but now it multiplies. Now it's exponentially superior to that. Cristiano Ronaldo moves the needle, right? Anything that he does, we've sat here in this show and talked about Cristiano Ronaldo's celebration flexing his abs. That's how meaningless the conversations can be about Cristiano Ronaldo, and yet it moves the needle. So if you're a new owner and you see this as a possibility and something that it's real and tangible for you, man, it's going to be tempting to turn it down.
Yep. Absolutely. It's so interesting. All the transfer talk, of course, not only here, but you can also head over to our website for more live transfer talk as it moves. And of course, with more on ESPN FC.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
The Women's European Championship kicks off tomorrow. You can watch every game live on ESPN and on ESPN+. Some exciting games on the way and some tough news before it even started, because Alexia Putellas will be out for the tournament. This is really tough news, of course, for the Spanish women's national team. At first, they thought it was just a knee sprain, this during training, but they have confirmed that it is a torn ACL. The Ballon d'Or winner and the multi-champion now with Barcelona, the captain, of course, will be out. Here's Kay Murray and Julie Foudy with more on this and the tournament.
Thanks, Christina. Yeah, Kay Murray and Julie Foudy here in our studios. It all kicks off tomorrow, but devastating news, as you just heard, about Alexia Putellas, and on the eve of the tournament as well, Julie.
Oh, it is gut-wrenching. I mean, Putellas, what she brings to this Spanish side, we know, World Player of the Year. She's won every single one of those awards, but she's not just the finisher. She's the playmaker. She's the leader. She's experienced. She's confident. She's swagger. She's all the things that Spain were hoping they could lean on as they went into this tournament looking for their first major trophy. And that is just gut-wrenching when you think about also Jenny Hermoso out as well. They're two top finishers. So this is going to be interesting for Spain and how they respond.
Yeah, obviously one of the favorites as well, with many of the odds makers the favorite. But this definitely could change things when it comes into it. It is a difficult group that Spain find themselves in, probably a little bit more difficult now without their star player. Let's take a look at the groups then, shall we? And break things down, starting with Group A. It all gets underway tomorrow with England against Austria. What do you make of the chances of these teams?
I'm sorry to say this, Austria, I am taking England and Norway out of this. We know the strength of England, Kay, playing at home, so much talent on that roster. And Norway, I think, is going to be a bit of a sleeper. And you got, I'll give you one name, Ada Hegerberg back in the mix. 5 years absent, she is back for Norway, and she changes that team. We know how good she is.
We absolutely do know how good she is. Obviously, former Ballon d'Or winner. Group B, who comes out of it?
This is the tough group, because Denmark could make a run, but I think in the end it's going to be Spain and Germany. And I think Germany, as we've known, of eight-time winners of the Euros, they've dominated this, but they haven't won it in over a decade. A very young team that could impress. And Spain, even without Putellas, we know they have so much talent, even without Jenny Hermoso. So I think Spain can get in as well in that Group B.
Let's head to Group C. It is Group C where we actually have the holders, Netherlands from 2017.
And this is an easier group for me. Sweden and the Netherlands are the two that get out for me. Sweden is a team at the Olympics we saw. I thought they were the best team by far at the Olympics. So fun to watch. Great on all three lines. Tons of talent and stacked everywhere. Netherlands, of course, they have Vivian Miedema. As we've seen, she can score goals in truckloads. But I don't think they have enough defensively to go deep in this tournament. But I am taking Sweden and the Dutch out of Group C.
All right. And then we'll wrap it up with Group D. This is where we see France, although we hear there is a bit of a problem in the dressing room there. But do they still get out of this group?
I do think France does get out, even though they are a hot mess. I think Italy is the other team that gets out of this group. But the French team, with all their talent, it's just so much controversy with Corinne Diacre, their head coach. And we will talk a lot about that during the Euros. But I think the Italians, eight players from Juventus, we saw how well they've done in Serie A. And I think they will be the second team out of there.
Hoping to recreate some of the success from the 90s. All right, let's talk about player to watch then. We've just knocked one of the star players off the Spain roster there. I'm sure her name would have come up a lot for player to watch in this tournament. But who should the viewers be looking out for during these women's Euros?
I think the player I am so interested in seeing is Lauren Hemp. And this is a player who plays for England, 21 years old. She has done it at Man City. We've seen her score goals. We've seen her take players on. We've seen her not yet at the international level at a major tournament. She's never played at a major tournament for England, but this is a fun player to watch at only 21 years old. So this is a player I am so excited to see in this tournament.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of excitement about her back in the homeland, and that's what makes things interesting as well. England, with a lot of pressure on them, the fact that they are hosting this tournament, they're among the favourites, but they're not alone in this. It's such an open tournament this time around. Who have you got winning it all?
Kay, I'm sorry, I'm going to disappoint you a little bit here, because I would like England. I would love England. But I think in the end, it's going to be Sweden. I think that is just too much talent for that Swedish team. Plus, they're a little bit chaffed about the Olympics, and they think this is the time they can get it done.
Okay, I'll let you off, Julie. Okay. I'm completely unbiased for this tournament going forward. We cannot wait for it all to get underway. It does so tomorrow. Please make sure you join us for the opening game. It is England against Austria. The game kicks off at 3 Eastern, but we will have coverage from 2:30 Eastern on ESPNU and also on ESPN Plus. Make sure to join us.
Thank you so much, Kay and Julie. And of course, there is Sweden as one of the official favorites for the tournament, a little bit behind what is Spain now. And we'll have to see how that blow now impacts them without Alexia Putellas. And of course, England, one of the favorites, of course, to take this all to see if football is indeed coming home. With much more on that, the Women's Euros, of course, start officially tomorrow. We know Julia Dorans and, of course, Alexis Nunes are so ready for this tournament to get underway. And now with this Alexia Putellas news, Julian, how could this negatively, of course, impact Spain?
Personally, I don't think they can win it without her. I have to say, this is a strong team. It's a strong collective, but she's the best player in the world. So take her out of that team. He's taking Messi out of Argentina. He's taking De Bruyne out of Belgium. He's taking Mbappe out of France. This is the impact that, unfortunately for Spain and for her, this injury will have. They will still be a very good team, but they won't be that team with the best player in the world in it, capable of winning this tournament. I think now, without her, there are other teams that will be stronger. I think psychologically, we cannot underestimate the impact that this injury will have on the rest of the squad. Because, of course, someone else will come in and play in that starting 11. But when you're Spain and you fill the team with Putellas or without, it makes a big difference. And I think psychologically, it's a huge blow as well for the players.
Absolutely. She had such an important year. And with this group now, Germany, Denmark, Finland, to go underway now tomorrow. But first, England against Austria in what is to be expected at Old Trafford, a sold-out crowd. Alexis, now it's a sad news with Alexia Putellas not being able to play the tournament, but how is the excitement around this first match where you're at?
Yeah, Christina, I think that was the news that definitely sent shockwaves around the media and here as well overall, that we're not going to get to see the great Alexia Putellas here playing for Spain in the Euros. But as I said, the show must go on. And I say it's a shame too, because I just took the train coming up from Birmingham to Manchester today. And in Birmingham New Street Station, which is a massive train station, you see all of the digital billboards with the Women's Euros players, some very big names on there, like Lucy Bronze, of course, for England. You know, you had Millie Bright there, Frank Kirby, but you also had Alexia Putellas up there too, because she's definitely one of them that everyone was looking forward to see. But as I said last week, we felt like some excitement was in the air, it was buzzing, but now I think it has definitely reached its peak. Now that I'm here in Manchester, I definitely see it right behind me. The Theatre of Dreams, Old Trafford, just to my left, there is a car park, which is a usual car park for Manchester United, but they've converted it completely into a fan zone viewing party area. And I think that that just lets you get an idea of how many people we are expecting to descend upon this area come tomorrow. We already know it's going to be over 74,000 in the sold out crowd inside of Old Trafford, but we're expecting even more who just want to come close, because we feel like this is definitely going to be one of the best women's tournaments in football that we have ever seen. And just behind me as well, there's Hotel Football. I'm not sure if anyone knows everything about Hotel Football, but for those of you that don't, it is a hotel that is owned by some of Manchester United's class of 92, some big names like Gary Neville, Phil Neville, Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes, and it is always sold out on Manchester United match days, the home days. And now, earlier on today, I popped in just to ask them if they're full to capacity, and they said 100%. They have been booked out for weeks for tonight and tomorrow night. A lot of people were checking in at that time. Interestingly enough, I saw a group of girls and I picked up on their accents. I could tell that they were American. I asked them, and they're from a middle school in New Jersey, and they said that their coach and their parents planned to send them over here so that they could take in some of these games. And I think that just tells you how big of an event this is going to be, because usually when you think of the USA, these girls have all the idols they could ever need just inside their own backyard. We know that the USA in the women's world of football are the powerhouse, but here they are coming over to Europe, because we know that, as we mentioned, Alexia Putellas, there's some other big names as well that have been really bossing the scene in the leagues over here, and I think everyone just wants to have a taste. And the main word that's being thrown around, I suppose, for us in the media is the quality, because we are all expecting a very good tournament of high quality football, not necessarily as many one-sided games as we may have seen in the past. Of course, there are the heavyweights like Sweden, but now we're also going to see a lot of nations who have put in the work in developing their women's football programs over the last couple of years, and now this is the perfect stage to showcase all of that talent.
England putting in the work now to host the tournament, and also all that talent we see, of course, with the Super League. Now, Julia, we know that it's already a victory being able to host such an important tournament. And of course, what Alexis was saying with the impact around with the girls, the locals, the future of football. What would it mean to win the trophy? What impact could this have now on football in England?
It would be amazing. It would be immense. We saw in 2019, we were in France for the World Cup. The impact that had, it feels already a long time ago. Unfortunately, the pandemic, I think, prevented the women's game to grow as quick as it would have done on the back of that 2019 World Cup. And now this is England's chance, like France had in 2019, to have that kind of impact. Of course, the further they go, especially if they win it, and especially if they win it before the boys, by the way, would be even more special. But even if they don't win it, it's to have this tournament, to have full capacity stadiums, and some are big like Old Trafford, some will be smaller, and for smaller games, of course, at times. But if you can have that kind of dynamic, the momentum with you in the stadiums, in the big numbers watching on television, advertising around it, and then put great light on all those amazing talents, all the amazing players. There's young players coming through who are so talented that deserve all the spotlight on them. You've got more experienced players like Wendy Renard for France, who'd probably be the last Euros for her. Again, she deserves the spotlight. And I agree, I think this would be, it's a very open tournament, even if you could say that Sweden are our favourite, but it's a very open tournament. It's probably the highest quality tournament we've had in women's football ever, even more the World Cup in 2019. I think this is even better, even bigger. There's the teams, the levels, everything, the coaching, the setups, everything is great. And I cannot see why this is not going to be a success. It will be a success.
Julien, which of course includes France in that talented group of footballers that we're going to see on ESPN. And I want to ask you, what are the chances now for France to have an important tournament with what's going on in the dressing room?
You're right. It's a great question. This is the key for me. Talent is not a problem. We've got loads of it. But it's what happens in that dressing room. It's that relationship between Corinne Diacre and her players. We know that for the last 3 years, really, even in the 2019 World Cup, despite the quarterfinal and they lost, they had a good game against the USA. They lost. I think they deserve to lose. But they put a good account of themselves. But since then, really, the tensions, even the fights at times between the players and the manager, the ones that she obviously didn't pick anymore, like Le Sommer, like Amandine Henry, which is really the big one, who went from being captain to being left out completely from the squads. These tensions are still there, even if now in front of the cameras, everybody's smiling, we're waiting for the start of the tournament and the game on Saturday. On Sunday, you could still see it. You could still love that dressing room. He's still knocking on Diacre. And if your dressing room and your team doesn't really believe in the head coach, then I'm not sure how far you can go. Quarterfinals has been a bit of a ceiling for the French lately. Mm-hmm. And I think the objective right now is at least the semi-final. But for that, one of the key will be that kind of environment and the relationship between head coach and players. And if we already talk about that before the start of the tournament, it tells you how difficult I think things would be for France later on in the tournament.
Now, in these talks that we're having before the tournament, as you mentioned, Julia, I want to ask you who your pick is for the favorite to take it all.
Well, I would say, you know, France, you know how biased I am, of course, even if you're new to the show, you know, I would always pick France or PSG, you know, the French teams. I have to be objective here. I still think that despite all the talent the France have, from Renard to Katoto to Diani, I think they might come short a little bit. I really believe that England can go far. I'm a bit like Julie. I don't think they can go all the way. I think the pressure will get to them, even if obviously their head coach has won it with Holland 4 years ago. I can see Sweden. I think Norway without Hegerberg being back have a great chance. And I would have said Spain as well before Alexia Putellas' injury. So I would have to go with Sweden. Because I think, I really believe that they are slightly above everybody else. But even Germany, Oberdorf and all the others have a you know, a big card to play. I really think it's open, but you have to say Sweden, has, for the recent result and everything, have to be a slight favourite here.
The battle between the head and the heart. Alexis, are you sticking with England as your favourite?
Always.
Man, that is the actual battle that's going on in my head and my heart over the last week. I know last time I did say I'm going to go with England because I believe that there's something special about this Lionesses team. I compared them to the current Liverpool squad and I said that I've never seen such an actual perfect harmony in any football team squad anywhere in the world. I've seen it with Liverpool and now I see it with this England Lionesses players. But then as well, part of my head wants me to go with Sweden. They are absolutely stacked. They know exactly what it is and what it takes to win on the biggest stage. But since Jules went with them, I'm going to go against Jules and I'm going to stick with England for this one. I think it could very well be coming home. One of the differences I've seen when you compare them to the men's run last year is that you really feel like this time the girls are absolutely relishing this chance. We know how the public here can be very brutal sometimes and quick to turn on teams, but I think after speaking to a lot of the girls on this Lionesses team, they said they've not even thought of that. Instead of trying to take these last couple of weeks and prepare and calm down, they've been ready to go from the first one. They said, you know, it's almost as if they didn't even need the friendlies because they were ready to go. They know exactly what to do. They have Serena Wiegman, who absolutely knows what it takes to win on this highest stage. And look, I mean, they didn't exactly say what her advice was when they went up against her own country, the Netherlands, but they blew them out of the water in that second half. I think that if they can just sort out their first half issues, because they can't seem to fire in any of the first halves in these last three friendlies, I think then they're definitely going to be probably the team to beat.
Well, different favorites for you guys, but I'm sure you're on agreement with what Julien said, that the level is going to be just so impressive. The Women's Euros that kick off officially tomorrow with England against Austria at 3 p.m. Eastern. You can follow that match on ESPN2, ESPNU, and of course streaming live on the app.
passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Right, Terrell Malacia has officially joined Manchester United now as Ten Hag's first signing for next season. He does it from Feyenoord for $13 million in transfer fee plus $1.7 million in add-ons. He made his professional debut with Feyenoord in 2017. Julien, is this a good signing, a good first signing for Ten Hag?
Well, I think he's a very talented player, very promising young left back who really had a wonderful season last year, both domestically and of course in European competition as well. Of course, they already have Luke Shaw and Alex Telles in that position as left back. But for what Erik ten Hag wants of his left back, he would just be perfect because he's got this really technical ability that is very, very great for his age, certainly. And then physically, he goes up and down that left-hand side all the time. He's really, I think, a great asset for the future for Manchester United. Again, there might have been other positions to strengthen first, but they thought that this one was the right time to make because he was about to sign for Lyon and they hijacked the deal at the last minute to bring him to Old Trafford. And they didn't want to miss out on him, which I think is a good sign again of the trust and the faith that Erik ten Hag and the club have into this young player.
Jules, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why is it only 13 million? If this guy's
because he's a young player, it's a really good question.
He's 22.
Yeah, he's a young player.
13 million for a proper player these days, it doesn't. The two things don't go together. 13 million for a guy who might turn out to be Dani Alves doesn't really add up to me.
No, it's a good question. I think, first of all, he came from Feyenoord and Eredivisie, where I don't think they can charge, maybe certainly not even transfer fees as high as Ajax, because, for example, he's never played in the Champions League before. He doesn't know what that is. He still has limited experience from top-flight football. And again, Feyenoord had a really good season last year, but it's not like if they've been winning everything for the last 10 years. And so maybe reflect not so much his talent, but the club that he came from, the league that he came from, and the little experience that he has as a first team player, really. I think it's more that than anything else. Lyon had the same agreement pretty much with Feyenoord. Again, if you look at other of the Feyenoord players, like Koksu in midfield, for example, he's worth 20 million euros, which again is quite cheap for someone of his talent. But yet again, he's Feyenoord and he's the Eredivisie.
Yeah, maybe not the big signing that Ten Hag wanted, at least for his first, Ali. But is this where Manchester United needed a little bit of strengthening?
Well, Jules just mentioned they already have two players in that position. But I'm going to go glass half full on this, right? Instead of looking at, how come this guy's only 13 million? Maybe you go, hey, this guy's only 13 million. And in the end, you throw this money out there. It's not a whole lot of money, and therefore, if he ends up becoming something for you, then it's great business for Manchester United. Now, in terms of him stepping in right away and playing, I don't quite see that happening. However, right now, the standard at Manchester United is very low. So if there was ever an opportunity for you to come in and say, hey, guess what? You can count on me. I can play from the very beginning. I can be a starter for this club. I think there's going to be open competition at Manchester United, and maybe this guy makes a run for it. And perhaps, why not? It's not like Luke Shaw and Alex Telles have run away with this, right? Luke Shaw has a history of injuries. When he's not around, then Alex Telles has come in, and he hasn't exactly been lining it up on fire. And so, therefore, there's a space there for this young man to come in and perhaps get himself into the rotation. Mm.
Glass half full, so you're saying you're a pessimist now?
Absolutely.
Well, on that with Manchester United, and of course, you can catch much more from these guys on Extra.
Look at that outfit. Look at that outfit. You like that outfit, Stevie?
What?
Patriotic, man. July 4th.
That's what we call a Bobby Dazzler.
No comment.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Welcome in to Extra Time. Christine Alexander in the studio with Stevie Nichol, who's a little bothered, but we can talk about that a little bit later. Ale Moreno and Julian Laurence. No, are you not? You're happy to be here.
Of course I am.
He's had some difficulties.
It's okay.
It's all right.
We're here to help you through it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Trying to be a good teammate.
And the good thing is that Jules is on with us as well, and that he took the time to do it, because when we're about to go on air just now, then he was doing something else. He was distracted, so we had to stop down. Just let the people know what's happening.
I didn't hear the music.
Oh, it's the music's fault now.
Oh, see. There we go.
All right. First question.
Not my fault.
For anybody.
Uh-huh.
Who needs Lewandowski more? Chelsea, Barca, or Bayern?
Go ahead, Jules.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think the way you need to look at it is, if he's not there, who is coming next from that current squad in those three clubs who can, like, do a decent job? It won't be as good as Lewandowski's job, but, I mean, Chelsea would have to play Kai Havertz as a number nine who can do a job, but certainly he's not a proper number nine. Then you look at Barcelona, they've got Aubameyang, who did okay last season after arriving from Arsenal, but who could be a good substitute. And then the third one is Bayern Munich. There's no one. If he leaves Bayern Munich right now, they've got no one in that squad to replace him. So I still think that of the three teams, the one who really needs him in the squad has to be Bayern Munich more than the other two.
Yeah?
Got to be, absolutely, yeah, 100%. Who plays if he leaves?
Yeah.
Nobody.
I agree.
Yeah.
Look at that. See? We can all come to an agreement.
Hey,
not often, stop, guys.
Not it's... often you're right, Jules, but you're right again.
Yeah. What a happy family.
The extra time effect. All right. Arsenal, Manchester United, Tottenham. Which of these is a bigger rebuild or is the nearest to winning a league championship? Stevie?
A league championship?
That answers the question.
Well,
but there are two questions here, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bigger rebuild is Manchester United. Can we agree on that? Yeah. And who's the nearest winning a league championship?
I mean, it's a stretch, but it's probably a straightforward answer, isn't it? Tottenham.
Spurs.
Yeah.
But, man, it's hard to say Spurs winning.
That's a stretch.
Yeah.
Jules?
I mean, they finished ahead of the other two, so they're obviously closer to the title than Arsenal and United.
Yeah. When in doubt, go with logic. Yes.
Jules, this one's for you. Pochettino's next destination?
Ooh. Well, I think he's wondering himself where that will be. He obviously missed out on the United job. He was him or Ten Hag, and they went for Ten Hag. I don't know how much that says about him and what happened in Paris, if really that sort of tarnished his reputation a little bit or not. He wants to come back to the Premier League, but right now there's none of the top six, and I don't think he would go outside the top six. I might be wrong. He might be one day interested in Newcastle, for example, or I don't know, Leicester or Aston Villa, I don't know. But at the moment, it's only top six for him, and there's just no job in the top six. And there might not be for a while, so then he will have to look somewhere else, which I think would be Spain probably more than any other leagues. And I don't know if Carlo Ancelotti, when Carlo steps down at Real Madrid, would Florentino Perez, who gets on really well with Mauricio Pochettino, can look at Poch and say, you know what, this is a good club for you, and Poch would walk there from London. So, but right now, in the very short future, I don't know, it's hard to see what club will feel like they need him.
The profile for Mauricio Pochettino has taken a major, major hit. And if you needed a picture as to how major this hit has been, when his team, PSG, was falling apart, melting in Champions League, and they cut out to Mauricio Pochettino, he's just standing there with his arms crossed, with a face that says, I have no idea what to do with this group. If you're a team owner or a decision maker in an elite team, and you see that, you kind of go, I need a whole lot more from a manager than just a guy who's standing there hoping that something happens, rather than trying to get something done on the field and not reacting when his team was simply completely falling apart and there was no help coming from the sidelines either.
Yeah, tough resume to look for his next team. All right, Stevie, this one's for you. Who do you think was better in their prime, Keegan or Dalglish?
Dalglish.
No doubt.
Keegan was a good team player, but Keegan was more of an individual player than Kenny. You know, Kenny's the guy that just helped glue every single thing together. He was the guy that got it from the back, he got it from the middle, he got it from his forwards. He brought other people into the game, whether it was his forwards, whether it was midfield players coming through, or whether it was attacking fullbacks coming late. He absolutely was the glue for every single thing. But as good as Keegan was, he wasn't that player.
Interesting.
Yep.
All right.
It's a lot of passion behind it.
Yeah,
right? So you
I
see,
love it.
You see how he got...
I love it. Yeah.
Just got up on...
It's right up my street.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You attacked that answer there, Stevie.
All right. Stevie and Ali, which ex-teammate do you stay in touch with the most? When was the last time you hung out? And do you talk football or do you try to avoid the subject?
It's kind of hard living in America, having played at Liverpool, to be honest with you. But
well, maybe not hung out, but stay in touch.
Stay in touch with, well, a lot of guys. Plus, there's always get-togethers, and you're always meeting up at Liverpool functions, and so yeah, not one in particular. Just probably half
Kenny?
A dozen. Absolutely, aye. Kenny, Hansen, I mean, Barnsley, Roshi. There's a good load. There's always a lot of stuff going on around the world that involves Liverpool supporters clubs or fans, or we're going to do not dinners, but we'll have like question and answer sessions, stuff like that. So we're always kind of meeting each other.
And I think this would be the case with Stevie as well. I think what's really interesting when you spend so much time with whoever this teammate may be is that you may not have seen each other for years. And the moment that you're put into the same room together once again, it takes you back 20 years, 30 years, whatever the case may be. And you're back to that place where it hasn't been 30 seconds and you're already having a go at each other. You're already you're already sharing stories, you're already kind of having the same great communication and fun time, the thing that we all miss as players, it takes you back to that time. And in the case, for example, for me with the Venezuelan national team, we have a WhatsApp group that, and we don't really get to see each other all that often. And I think the last time that I saw most of the guys was over a decade ago. And yet, the moment in which they put us in the same room as they did last year, we had a sort of a get together to play a game for charity and what have you. It was as if we were back in training, back in the locker room, and all the stories continue to come out and come up, and it sort of reminded you why you enjoy playing the game. And that's that. I think that's the thing that we appreciate the most, that those guys take you to a time in which you really enjoy what you were doing with your life.
And the thing to add to that, the hierarchy stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Even though everybody's got older, the hierarchy, when you go in that dressing room with everybody, it goes back. No matter what time it is, whether it's 30 years, 40 years, whatever, the hierarchy goes the same. The guy who was top dog then is still there. It doesn't change.
The unspoken agreement.
It doesn't change.
Well, it's funny, because we're about to go into this game, and it's an exhibition, right? And then we get in a huddle in the locker room, as we did when we were players. And it's the same guys talking in the huddle as it was a decade ago, 10, 15 years ago. It's the same. And then the guys that don't say much, they're the same, it's the same profile. And yet, everybody has a place, everybody has a role. Everything makes sense. In the locker room, everything makes sense. As crazy an environment as it is, everything makes sense in that environment for the guys who are part of the locker room.
Well, your friends, your family can try to understand what that was like, yeah, in the day-to-day, but the team, your teammates really, truly understand,
yeah,
I mean, what that was
into,
like.
You fall into it.
Yeah.
You don't even try. It just happens.
Oh, that's nice.
Aww.
That's nice, guys. Nostalgic. Good times. All right, for Ale, have you ever taught someone to dive?
Well, you have to have that.
Not into a pool, by the way.
Hold on. I was driving the other day. He was standing on the corner selling videos of himself. Get your videos, y'all.
For how much?
Burn DVDs. Well,
clearly too much, because nobody was stopping.
You're saying I had a blanket out there with burned, yeah, DVD videos.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing.
In a suitcase full of them.
Okay. You have to have a certain ability to do it correctly. And again, I will say it's not diving, it's drawing fouls. It's not flat out diving, no contact diving, no.
There's definitely an art to it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It's not just a case of falling over.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And you have to anticipate that where the contact is gonna be, how do you use your body, and then once you feel that the slightest nudge, then that's when you then go and sell it. But don't over embellish, because then it becomes too obvious.
If the answer was no before, it's now yes, because Ale just described how to dive on extra time.
Yes, but if you want more, then I have a DVD for you. That I
He's got a lot of DVDs.
Shameless plug. Shameless plug on extra time from Ale Moreno.
Yeah.
All right, for the panel, did you all celebrate 4th of July? If yes, how did you celebrate? Any favorite 4th of July memories to share?
I was on YouTube most of the day.
Oh, okay.
Did absolutely nothing.
Oh, good.
Good for you.
Absolutely nothing. With the grandkids for the previous week, and my granddaughter went home on the Friday because she'd been away all week and to see her mum. And my other grandson was staying at his pal's round the corner from our house. So we had a break. Me and Eleanor did nothing. I sat in the other room and watched daft stuff on YouTube all day.
Okay.
Took the dog a walk.
Okay.
And that was it.
It's a great day. That's,
yeah,
what you're saying.
Magic.
Right.
Disconnecting from reality. That's always a nice thing too.
There was a neighborhood cookout on Sunday, and then yesterday after the show, I went to a friend's house also for...
A few Shirley Temples?
I did not.
Oh.
No, Shirley Temples. No. There was some good food, fireworks, nice pool. I mean, all the good things. You know, all the classics. I scored my first goal in MLS in a 4th of July game against the New England Revolution.
It must have been at your place. It wouldn't be.
Yeah, at our place in LA. Yeah.
Yeah. We always traveled.
Yeah.
Because everywhere we went,
yeah,
they had a fireworks display. pretty much.
Yeah, fireworks were until like 2 3 in the
Colorado
morning.
Colorado was the best ever. We always used to go to Colorado the 4th of July, all the time.
That's nice.
And we'd start the game, yeah, and there would be 15,000 people there. And then after about 25 minutes, there'd be 20,000 people there. And then by half time, there'd be 30,000 people there. And by halfway through the second half, there'd be 35,000 people there. And by the time the game was finishing, the stadium was packed because they were all coming to watch the firework display after the game.
So it was not
one
the game.
So as soon as the final whistle went, it was one of them, right, get off the field as quick as you can, get your gear on. We need to get the bus away before all, before everybody who's come for the fireworks display tries to get out. We did it every year.
Now, these are the concerns that you have while the game is going on.
Seriously.
It's like, hey.
Half-time.
It's 25,000 people
that
here.
That section was empty before it started.
The last thing you said at half-time before they went out was, hey, the final whistle goes, get yourself back in there and get changed.
Final spring.
Because we don't want you stuck in the traffic.
I watched some fireworks too. It was a good time. All right, that's it for us on Extra Time. It's always a good time. Always interesting stories on Extra Time. And of course, you can get more from ESPN FC, available daily on ESPN+.